45. What's up, team? Welcome back to What the F45 podcast. And today we are covering overreaching. So overreaching is essentially overtraining, but it's actually its own term. So you'll learn a little bit about what exactly that means and how to identify if you are, in fact, overtraining or overreaching. This question was submitted to us via Instagram, and we thought it was really well-timed in accordance to the challenge. So we hope you enjoy this information, and please let us know if you do have any questions. Reach out on Instagram or click the link in our bio to submit a question.
What's up? How's your day going?
Pretty good. Pretty good.
We don't really get to talk too much. We work shoulder to shoulder all day, and we don't really get a chance to
talk. We're in the same house, but we don't necessarily chat during the day. It's hard to find those little pockets of time. Usually I just sneak some food into your office
and conveniently when I'm on a call.
Scurry away. Yeah.
This is the COVID work from home lifestyle.
Yep. But you know, I gotta make you your food, otherwise you'll just eat Daryl's bars all day.
I might actually overreach. Yeah. So we're really excited for today's episode, guys. So we've been encouraging our community to submit questions to us for quite some time, things they want to learn about, because I think those make the best podcasts. When you interview somebody or you take on questions and try and answer them as a way to sort of scale personal training advice. So we've got a really good one today, and it's actually something we think about quite a bit in our studio about some of our diehard members who have been with us for a long time, and you know, whether we're they're periodizing and managing their training well. So the podcast, of course, gives us an opportunity to scale out that advice. So yeah, the question was this. So I've heard that you need to be careful when it comes to overdoing it with HIIT workouts specifically, and especially if you have hormonal imbalances. And I've read that overdoing HIIT workouts can have the opposite effect. And instead of losing weight, you can gain or maintain weight. And particularly with respect to hormones. So this is kind of a big focus. Can it mess up my hormones further and thus impact my weight gain or loss? So this is such a great question, because we talk about hormones a lot. You know, we talk about energy balance a lot, but hormones are definitely the signalers of the body, and they control speeding up and slowing down processes.
We also talk a lot about overtraining too, because a lot of people don't understand that sometimes less is more. And sometimes we get really addicted to our training routine too, and we just want to do it all the time, and we're not really taking into account how to recover as well.
Yeah. And so, you know, in order to understand overtraining or overreaching, these are two things that we're going to talk about a lot today. You first need to understand why we exercise, right? But besides having a good time and dance around at F45, why is it that we exercise? And so there's a principle key and central to exercise, anaerobic hypertrophy training, aerobic training, which is called the general adaptation syndrome. And what this suggests is that over time, incremental physiological stressors will require the body to build itself back up stronger and have incremental adaptations in kind, so that it can physiologically transform itself to be able to handle that stress. And so one of the key words I mentioned there was incremental. And oftentimes, we know, and we talked about this when it comes to dieting specifically, or sort of managing your macros and your nutritional intake. We don't really like to use the word dieting anymore. It's kind of a bad verb, although, you know, it does mean the right thing. But in any case, people come out of the gates hot. You know, like we talked about last week, instead of just going to maintenance and understanding where the metabolism is, whether you're new to training or you're lighting it back up, you come out of the gates hot. We're doing this. We're losing 20 pounds. And you go like a bull on the march. Or was it run of the bulls in Spain? You just come out hot. You see red. Yeah. And we really honor that enthusiasm. But sometimes it can have a short expiry because you're not taking that purposeful incremental approach to things. And that leads to what's commonly known as overtraining. But in fact, in the literature, there's a distinction between overreaching and overtraining. In fact, there's even further distinction. There's like six different distinctions, but we'll just get into three today. From overreaching, there's actual...
That's an actual like term, overreaching.
You got it. So overreaching precedes overtraining. And so overreaching has two categories. Number one is functional overreaching, and number two is non-functional overreaching. And then number three, a progressed version of that is overtraining syndrome, Okay. So I'll define what these things are. And we know, we see these things, you know, in our worlds with all the people that we work with, and we've probably felt them ourselves. So overreaching occurs after, it can be, you know, a few days to a few weeks. And this non-functional overreaching can actually be beneficial. So runners like to call it a taper period, where we sort of take our training to the limit, to the point where we are kind of feeling worn out, and we might not be able to run the next day or lift the next day. Perhaps our muscles are, so delayed onset muscle soreness, what we refer to as DOMS, is typically muscle soreness that lasts 2 days. So you often hear us talk about in the studio.
DOMS.
Yeah, you got it. So you come in for your workout and you don't feel your muscles sore the day of. You may feel it the first day, and then the second day, 48 hours after, is the worst, right? Especially for a new training intervention. And Bowie's letting us know she's here because we're doing a podcast.
She's actually playing. Typical. You guys are used to that with a bone that we gave her, and sometimes she just plays with it.
Yeah, we tried to pacify her with a bone, which is always a terrible idea because she's like, I'm smarter than you guys. I'll just throw this around like a baton and,
yeah,
you know, get involved.
So you might just hear some random little barks, but
yeah, it'll distract us more than you guys. Anyways, like I was saying, so this taper overreaching period can actually be used, and that's why it's called functional, because we can put it to work where we kind of take that purposeful rest period, allow our muscles to recover, get our motivation back, get our electrolytes where they need to be, and then go perform. We take that temporary degradation in performance and we utilize it as a recovery period. If that persists, if that feeling persists for, you know, a period of greater than 2 weeks, and it's a little subjective, but then we get into what we call non-functional overreaching. So this is still not an irreparable situation. In fact, none of the situations are irreparable, but it's still not full overtraining. And so now it's called non-functional because now you've got hormonal things happening, disturbances. You're having probably mood swings in kind with that. Our metabolism is going up and down accordingly, maybe slowing down usually. And we might be getting into some micro injuries like tendonitis, stress fractures, those sorts of things. And we certainly have a material performance change. So in that F45, we're not able to lift as heavy. We may not be motivated to come in. Perhaps we can't get our heart rate to where we want it or get the line heart points.
It is frustrating if you even have the slightest bit of a twinge going on. We all know, we've all been there, and you're just like, oh, I can't push it right now. But sometimes we still do because we just want to, like, oh, I got to get into the gym.
That's right. So, and then the last one is overtraining syndrome. And so overtraining syndrome is typically after four to six weeks of this non-functional overreaching. And this is where it gets a little, I'm going to use the word scary, concerning, because now you have, you're not bouncing back from those hormonal disturbances that you created from overtraining and doing. Your metabolism has slowed down because, as we talked about before, your body's efficient. If you're constantly pushing it to the limit and saying, we need to conserve this much energy in order to go do this exercise I'm being forced to do every day, I need to slow down so I can hold on to some of this body fat. And then hormonally, what's happening is we're producing more of the stress hormone cortisol in a non-advantageous way, to the point where it's starting to waste muscle. It's slowing down our metabolism. It's decreasing our insulin sensitivity, mm-hmm. right? So insulin up all the time, cortisol up all the time. In the sympathetic fight or flight, all of a sudden the body starts wasting muscle, preserving body fat for energy so that it can feed the brain, so on and so forth. You go down this rabbit hole and it just gets pretty bad.
And all the hormones are interlinked somehow. And, you know, you kind of kick one of the legs out from underneath of the multiple stools, but some of them are all connected, like adrenals, cortisol to insulin, you know, then your sex hormones and your thyroid could also be incorporated into that too. So there is those areas where people might be thinking, is this going to affect me hormonally? So I think it's a valid question. So I'm interested to hear more.
Oh, really? Well, I'm the scientist, apparently. Yeah. But, you know, the thing is, it's interesting when you dig into the literature a little further, you know, you look at, well, what drives that overtraining, right? Is it volume? Is it intensity? So intensity is like, how much are we lifting? How much power are we exerting in our workouts? So moving weight quickly? How much aerobic work are we doing? So think about our athletes who are doing like soccer games every day or our tennis players, looking at myself. And so the studies show, unsurprisingly, it's volume that really is the contributor. Now, is all volume created equal? No, right? Like I know in my own training right now, I'll often come in at F45 and purposely have a 50% load day just to move, because movement is medicine.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. I think it's still, you know, you don't need to
stop training completely it just because you think you might be overtraining. So that's also, I think, a fine line where some people might be like, well, I go 6 days a week. I'm overtraining, obviously. Maybe not. Maybe if you're really good at your recovery strategies, your body feels good, you're sleeping well, you're eating well, you can likely still get away with 6 workouts a week. But it really depends on what you consider a workout. Is like, you know, on your off days, are you still active? Are you still walking? Are you still doing yoga? Or is it yoga a day where you consider it a workout? Because I consider that more of a recovery and active movement. So I think that's all important to consider when you're thinking if you're overtraining.
Totally. Yeah. And you know, here's the challenge with overtraining. And I actually mentioned this to the individual who reached out to us about this. The challenge with overtraining is that it's highly personal in terms of you and what you can handle. And it can change from time to time. So one fallacy of metabolism is we think, oh, I built this muscle, thus my metabolism is this. My BMR, my basal metabolic rate, is this. No, that changes from day to day based on so many factors, many of which we don't even understand to this day.
Yeah.
So it's always a moving target. Your body's always trying to maintain homeostasis, which means balance of all of its systems. And so it's a moving target. But, generally, based on some of the symptoms that I mentioned earlier, kind of how we're feeling and some other things that I'm going to go through now, we can kind of get a sense as to where we're at. So some things to think about, like number one, are you new to training, right? Like if you have never done F45 training or CrossFit training or Olympic lifting or hypertrophy training or running is a big one too. I think that's the thing. Humans were meant to run, right? And so we were meant to run, but and jog and walk, right? Naturally, we're upright mammals. But the problem is that we've been sitting in chairs for so long that our bodies aren't really rigid and strong for that anymore. And we sort of have to be very mindful about how we approach something like long distance running, right? Mm-hmm. So that's, you know, one thing all the time. We see that often, right? Like run equals weight loss or the solution. And
or people just, the first thing that they do are like, oh, I got to lose weight. If they don't move whatsoever, the first thing they think of doing is running because it's the most accessible. It's easy.
Totally. Which we love about
that.
To
an extent, easy. I wouldn't call it easy. It's like the last thing I would do, but that's personal.
As the years go on, it gets harder and harder for
me. But people just go right into that thinking that that's the best way to lose weight and being undertrained and just going for a run, you are going to feel a lot of things that you didn't want to feel the next day.
Our running athletes in the studio will tell you like how respectful you need to be of sort of running economy and technique and those sorts of things, right? And you know, it's not like riding a bike. I can tell you that from having been a runner and not even close to the level of these people in the past. So the first thing is, are you new to training? So you need to honor that, right? So as you're approaching training, you really want to think about, you know, let's use F45 as a good proxy because that's the primary audience that we speak to, right? You know, maybe it's coming to 2 strength days your first week and 1 cardio day and then checking that off and then supporting that with some swift walking on other days. So Andy talked about earlier, you like the use of the word swift there?
Yeah.
You like that? Yeah. Dad jokes by the day.
I guess I might have slightly rolled my eyes there. I don't know.
But, it's easing into it. And you might feel like you have more in the tank. But, you know, if we kind of come out 7 days, right, pushing it to the limit, where do we go from there? Right? So we want to think about that incremental progressive overload. We want to think about the long game and doing this for quite some time. And you can work with your coach to sort of understand what a good volume is based on your goals, right? Maybe if the goal is muscle growth, you are focusing on coming to 3 strength days out of the gate. Maybe you're not doing a cardio day. Maybe 1 every 2 weeks, right? Depending also.
Or just a hybrid instead of a full cardio.
Totally. Actually. And you know, the question that was asked to us in a specific kind of to F45, well, the word HIIT was used, and I think that can mean a lot of different things, right? HIIT can refer to a timing intervention for strength training. HIIT can refer to a hybrid workout, like Andy just mentioned.
Yeah.
Right?
Or it's like, you know, the traditional high intensity interval training was like sprints and the bikes. It's like extreme sort of max capacity of your cardio capacity and output, and then having that rest period. And like, that's traditional HIIT training. Yes, what we do at F45 is HIIT, but on our strength days, it's pretty much more or less HIIT timing than it is actual HIIT training.
Yeah. I mean, this is a big fallacy and we want to be careful here. Exactly like you said, the HIIT training was designed so that sort of individuals who weren't as active could actually get the cardiovascular benefits and mitochondrial benefits that we get from being able to perform at an athletic level, right? So like you said, whether it's a swift walk for 30 seconds and then a gradual one for 2 minutes, I mean, that's HIIT and that's like a 30-minute protocol, right? Maybe it's on the bike for 10 sets of 30 seconds on, 1.5 minutes off, and that's it, right? These workouts are sub 20 minutes.
And they're meant to be short. And that's, again, where we fall into that category, because our workouts are like, you have the short rest periods and you do a lot of good work in a short period of time rather than kind of moseying along, like doing your own thing, you probably take double the amount of time and you might not get your heart rate where it needs to when you're training on your own or you're not sure of what, how to put those things together.
Well, the other thing that we do is you know, we provide a variety of exercises. So it's not like the bike over and over and over again. Yeah. So beyond interest, that actually spreads out kind of the load on the different areas of the body, which is a very good thing. So yeah, are you new to training? What else are you doing in your life, right? So I always like to use myself as an example. I won't go to the triathlon folks who are another great example. And they actually, I love the way that, you know, Coach Aaron and Spencer manage their plan. They always come into the gym with a plan.
And Coach Chris.
Coach Chris too, yes, sorry, Chris. Mm-hmm. They come into the gym with a plan and it's very mindful as to the volume that they're doing elsewhere.
Based on the races that they have especially too, right? It's all around like, you know, and I think that's another interesting way to go about like not a lot of like, I don't want to say average in a way that sounds insulting, but average people that aren't competing in some way, shape or form, like bodybuilders or triathletes, they have a schedule of when they are, you know, bringing up their training volume and when they're tapering it down and when they have a deload week where they literally do nothing. There's all some really scientific purpose behind how they structure that. And sometimes I think that it's very valuable for the layperson, which you would say, to know.
It's also like derogatory, eh? Like,
I know that actually. Like
wait, what was it called the other day? It was a real person. What was the abbreviation?
Oh, a NARP?
A NARP. Non-athletic real person?
Non-athletic real person. Yeah, it was a NARP.
The NARPs.
It was an abbreviation we just learned, so that's good too. So rather than the lay person, but a NARP.
The NARP. It sounds more derogatory, but you know, you got it.
So yeah, I mean, I think it's a good idea to, especially during our challenges, to think about how you're structuring your workouts during challenges and in your maintenance phases. That's why F45 has the challenge app and why there is a maintenance feature for the meal plan. And you can think about that too. When you're in maintenance and you're eating more calories and you have more energy, that's a good time to grow. That's a good time to make changes. And then during the challenges, you might be on a little bit of a cut. Now, I won't say that people don't always, Bowie's going to come up here with us. She wants to.
Come on up.
People don't always cut during challenges. Some people have a strength challenge as well, and we want to honor that.
It's kind of what we're doing right now. We're going
to
get
into it. Yeah, like
later.
Everybody has a different focus. So you need to figure out what your focus best is for you during those specific weeks and blocks of time so that you can have a really good plan. And yeah, you can ask your coaches or us about that, but I'm going to have to move over so Bowie can come on here. But, you know, I think it's always good for everybody to have a plan.
Yeah. Well said, Andy. Well said for sure. And you know, it's crazy and I'm guilty of this. And I talked about the tennis is that we often don't believe that we can achieve more with doing less. And the science proves otherwise that, you know, having those kind of what I like to call trigger sessions where you come in and you have like a 50% intensity day and, you know, just going through those motions actually will help you recover better and grow better because resources are finite, right? In the body.
And building muscle is still like more about volume than it is about doing like
intensity,
lower body day, like hard lower body day once a week. And that's it kind of thing. So you're better off still engaging certain muscle groups. Even if you're not going to go to the full 100%.
Totally. I go back to the tennis thing, right? I'm not doing a lot of F45 HIIT workouts or cardio workouts these days because I'm playing 4 or 5 times a week. Right. So I'm leveraging strength training at F45.
I also had to ask him to take it down a notch so that he didn't overtrain. Cause even people that know they should practice what they preach. They don't always, because we get it. F45 is addictive. Tennis and or any sort of sport can be very addictive, and it's hard to bring it down.
Well, I think we've talked to this before. Exercise is the easy one to do. Managing your nutrition recovery is much more difficult. I'd say the recovery piece is even harder.
Yeah.
Who wants to wake up and do like a primal movement pattern thing to get themselves ready for the day? I mean, that's like the next level for me. I have hard enough time sort of, you know, ensuring I'm hitting my protein goal. I mean, I don't miss it by much, but it's to hit that 200 every day is a feat, you know, absent 6 Darrell's bars and, you know, the whole stretching and kind of purposeful recovery, that's difficult, right? And so something to be mindful of. So I wanted actually, Andy, for you to touch on the menstrual cycle research here, because I know that you looked into a little bit like, hey, for women specifically. So one of the tragedies of the literature, guys, is often college age males, the stuff's done on. Just like with animal studies, we're like, okay, but like put that in human context, put that in integrated world where it's, you know, not in a lab, how does that translate, right? So we start to learn from Power Eating, I think was the book, Power Eating Edition 2, mm-hmm. a little bit of the research on the menstrual cycle and how that relates to strength. So something to be mindful of with overeating, right?
What's up, team? It's Coach Andy here to talk about Bio-Optimizers. They are a supplement company that I am an ambassador for, and the reason being is because I absolutely love their products, and that is why I contacted them to become an ambassador and not vice versa. So I only talk about products that I actually use myself and love. So I know you're going to love these. They have the best formulations of probiotics, digestive enzymes, magnesium, and more. So check out their website at www.bioptimizers.com. That's biooptimizers.com. Use code COACHANDY for 10% off their entire site.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's very interesting for women to take note of their energy levels during the different phases of their cycle. Now, I always get it confused as far as which is the follicular and which is the luteal. So I'm probably not going to get this right.
You might have
right.
to do a follow-up in the show notes.
Yeah, I'm going to have to. I could also just Google it right now.
Yeah. I'll distract them.
Yeah. So, but for sure, I know at which phase you are your weakest, which is actually leading up to your period. Mm. So people would think it's while you're on your period, but it's actually not. So there's a 2-week sort of slump down where there's some hormones are drastically dropping and some of them are increasing. Progesterone increases, which is more relaxing, but it actually makes you feel a little bit more lethargic and tired. So as that's increasing and your estrogen is dropping, you get cranky, but you also get very tired and you're not going to recover as well. And it could last a whole 2 weeks. If you really know your body, you might even know that pinpointed, 7 days before your menstrual cycle, that's when you feel your most tired or your crankiest. Like that's when I notice that hormonal shift where I get a little bit more snappy and I don't even know what I like. Sometimes something comes out of my mouth and I'm like, what did I just say? And why was I so like angry about it? And I think we can all agree that that happens. And in some cycles it's worse than others. So it's really, you never really know, but you just have to pay attention to it. So it's good to journal that or put it in your app. If you even track your cycle, I think it's really interesting to note those things and how often does it happen? Are you exactly 7 days out or 6 days out that starts to happen? And then noticing and feeling and being a little bit more sensitive with yourself so that you don't, bring yourself down because you aren't performing the same way that you were a couple weeks ago.
Besides motivation, like how does that tie into overreaching? So like, is that an opportunity to kind of have a taper period?
They said in the Power Eating book, they actually did a study on Olympic athletes, all women, to see their output and their performance during those phases. And they noticed a clear decline in that 2 week, but especially the week before their menstrual cycles, they weren't able to perform at the same level. They weren't, their RPs were not as good, or PRs, RPs. So I think it's just, go easy on yourself. It's okay if you're just having a week where you don't feel as strong or you don't feel like coming in as much or
purposeful though, like design it around that. Give yourself like distance makes the heart grow fonder and the body grow stronger.
Yeah.
So give yourself that active recovery.
It's going to happen and plan accordingly for sure.
The science continues to show us that having 2 reps in reserve is the best way to actually grow as muscle. Now, periodization is in fact the ultimate way, which is essentially that blending in a given week or, every 3 weeks or so, kind of changing the focus from strength to, strength being like, a heavy 1-6 rep set. I don't advocate for 1 rep sets. If you do, like you're not going your max, maybe just below it, but something like that. And then getting into 8-12 rep range where you're kind of getting that more of that muscle burn feeling, right? That fulfilling pump flush feeling. And like we got to give Francois his regular shout out. It's about stimulation, not annihilation.
Should
right?
we interview him?
Yeah, maybe. How you been, man? But yeah, so that was a good point. And I think people could try and experiment with that and plan around it and then really hit it hard after, see if that has any impact for them, and then kind of gradually build up. And that's like a little micro periodization you guys could do.
Yeah, especially for women. And one thing I'd like to add to
men wouldn't need to worry about that. But you know, if you want to hang out with your buddy, your partner, just go for it.
The men have no excuse to have low energy. No, I'm joking. But that is something that particularly affects women, and it's half of the month, every month. So it's important to pay attention to those little things. But one thing you can do, knowing that week, especially that last week, you know, make sure you're sleeping even longer, like get the extra sleep. If that means that you're a 6 a.m. or you're going to sleep even earlier, just so that you avoid like injury and, you know, the more tired we are, the more like, you know, during that week, if we already have less of an output of strength and aerobic capacity, then you definitely want to give yourself more sleep. And ashwagandha and 5-HTP are really good supplements to add into your regime, especially that week.
So now you're making me feel like I gotta go to bed early tonight because I agreed to play some tennis tomorrow at 7. So
yeah, you
I
are.
Should definitely not be watching Ozark tonight.
No.
The life's tough. All right, get the books out. So anyhow, are you undergoing any other stressors? So one thing we need to remember as it relates to this idea of hormones in the body and overtraining and overreaching preceding that is the body and we hear about, like, we've all been reading these psychology books for years now, right? So I don't think there's anyone listening to this that hasn't seen the saber-toothed tiger analogy. Back in the day, we used to see tigers, the body reacted, it was useful, now it's not. When your boss yells at you and you have the same reaction, well, that's true. Like, the reality is the body sees stress, we keep hearing about holding stress. Do you hold your stress in your traps? What does that mean based on the meridians and the chi of the body and everything? It's all interconnected, guys. So the body and the adrenal glands and the hormonal system, it understands stress. So if you're redlining it in the gym, you're redlining it in life, you're moving next week, you know, you just had a baby, like men, like the fathers and someone just, your wives just had a baby and you're trying to do all this, you're not sleeping, you're setting yourself up for a tough time. So what you need to be mindful of is life and training have cycles, week to week, month to month, right? And so long, it's difficult to build muscle. It can be done, of course. We're all examples of that, but it's harder to build muscle, easier to maintain it. So take solace in the fact that if you keep your protein and sleep up and you're training even like 20 minutes a day or you know, 2 45-minute sessions of strength training a week, provide you're maintaining your weight and your protein, you're not going to lose muscle, right? So just respect that, because I'll tell you, if you do come in 7 days a week and you keep trying to pound it and everything's going on around you, you will digress. Mm-hmm. And to the question asker's point, you can start putting on body fat and you're just asking yourself, why? I'm working harder and I'm going the wrong direction.
Well, you can also think of it in the way of, Where is that insulin going to go if you aren't preserving your muscle mass properly by eating good amounts of protein and sleeping and prioritizing
where
that?
Where's carbohydrates and sugars going to go, you mean?
Yeah.
Where's insulin going to send
yeah. it? Yeah.
To fat storage.
Yeah. So, I mean, depending on how you're eating at that time, you know, especially when we're stressed, we tend to eat worse, which is unfortunate because they're comforting. And then we are still trying to just like, well, I'm eating badly, so I better go harder in the gym because I got to burn those calories. Again, it could just be having the opposite of effect because you're not actually paying attention to the right amount of macronutrients, especially protein, to keep your muscle mass and your recovery periods as well.
I love it. So this is kind of this, you know, area that we're kind of exploring right now together is more of like interventions, but also how to measure things. So I think it's obvious by now that just monitoring your mood and how you're feeling, if you're demotivated to work out and that's not a common thing for you, probably a sign. In fact, I've been going through that lately. I told you that the other day. I'm like, oh man, I cannot get in the weight room. You know, and part of that's my little tennis addiction, but you know, having the knowledge, knowing I need to lift, I've been having this like man versus himself battle of like, you know, knowing I need to lift, right? And having a tough time motivation-wise because of how hard I'm working. One thing we haven't talked about, but we talk about often, what's the blood work saying? So your naturopath, and I say that purposely because oftentimes without putting them in a strong arm, your doctor doesn't have the resources or in their network or just the willingness to kind of get you the blood work that you require. I mean,
test everything that's necessary to be tested. Sometimes they push back on things. They're like, you don't need
to
check that.
Well, it's also paid, right? OHIP only covers so much depending on the situation. I'm sure
you
there's
might
some
need
negotiation
to ask,
there.
You have to ask for vitamin D because it costs $30 to look at. So they might even just say, okay, yeah, but it's going to cost you a little bit of extra. But even certain things, if you're like, you want a deeper look, sometimes they push back and they won't actually, you know, put everything on there.
Yeah. So one thing you know, to be mindful of is asking those questions, saying, hey, I have a concern about overreaching or overtraining. And so what they're going to do is they're going to run a panel that looks at certain markers, like your ratio of cortisol to sex hormones, right? So particularly testosterone. If they're finding the ratio is in a cortisol to testosterone, where it's growing, so the testosterone or the cortisol component of that equation is growing too high beyond the normal level, that's an indication you're not producing enough testosterone. And ladies, yes, you need testosterone too for performance. And, you know, certain, you know, masculine, productive masculine energy qualities. Is that appropriate to say? I don't know.
Productive.
I mean, I guess it's masculine. It's not really, the hormone does not belong to men. So it shouldn't even categorize that way. It's just kind of, that's how it is seen, I guess.
You guys have more of it.
We happen to have more estrogen. But it's useful for both sexes is my point.
And it doesn't mean that men can't get too much estrogen inadvertently too.
Well, it's funny you say that because in overreaching scenarios, that's what does begin to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And so we won't even go. And then that's what happens when we get excessive body fat. We start to produce more estrogen, right? So these things are all connected. They're signalers, right?
Yeah.
And so, you know, we really want to be mindful of that. And if we even go down the testosterone rabbit hole, you know, think overreaching, you think more cortisol, you think less testosterone. That's also a reason why you have lacking of motivation, because it's that testosterone hormone that gives us that get up and go, achieve, conquer, crush. And when that's in low reserves, like your sex drive goes down, your willingness to go work out hard goes down, your ability to produce muscle mass goes down. So, oh, thanks, Bowie. That's really, you heard sex hormone and you just had to get after it. Eh?
For those who are just listening in, Bowie's just
having a bath.
Going, yeah. I was going to say going to town on herself, but.
Dogs would be dogs, eh, Bo? Yeah. So, I mean, go get that blood work done. The other one is CRP and other metabolites in our body. We can really get a sense of, are we overtraining, right? There's creatinine. There's all sorts of different things your naturopath will look at and give you a marker as to how you're overtraining. And then getting into the next section, we're going to talk about what can you do about it. So instead of doing nothing, because that's obviously a solution, do less. What are some of the proactive, productive things that you can do to help support recovery, right? Enhance recovery, speed it up. So, you know, the first one, Andy talked about it, sleep, quality sleep, right? So if you're a 6-hour person like me and you kind of wake up at 5 a.m. every day, you better be getting to bed early enough and you better have a wind down strategy. Admittedly, guys, I've nailed this at times in my life. I'm not nailing it right now. I'm having a tough time with it.
I think a lot of people go through ebbs and flows of doing really well with this. And there's so many different factors, whether it's, you know, a change of work, you know, and what time you're starting, having a new baby,
or even just
having kids in general, you know, your sleep is going to be disrupted. And I think people end up feeling defeated because they're like, how am I ever going to prioritize this? Like, this is impossible. I know that this is the amount of sleep that I can get and I'm not going to be able to improve that in any way. But there is. And honestly, I think that it comes down to the same thing that I always say when people say they can't meditate, which, you know, we don't all have those practices nailed down. But I think everybody assumes if I can't meditate every day for 20 minutes,
right,
it's pointless. So they just don't. Where it's like, what can you do that makes even incremental, small differences?
You know, it's a great point, right? Because as we're talking about this, I'm like, when I have my best sleeps, what do I do to make myself tired? Now we have the opportunity to have a sauna. So we have that despite being really sweaty and gross. I mean, it does kind of put us in a bit of a relaxed parasympathetic state. Maybe some stretching before bed, not watching TV as much as I want to watch that Ozark tonight.
That's probably the biggest thing.
I'm hooked.
I think everybody knows, and I think we all do this, and we are the same, right? We're not saying that we are above you guys or we do anything inherently different. We struggle with it too. But I think that's the biggest thing. I think if you can commit to only certain nights watching TV until a certain time, because it's very easy to go an extra half an hour, an extra 45 minutes, an extra hour. And that's huge for sleep.
Like, especially if you have a circadian rhythm. Like mine's different from Andy's, right? Like Andy can get more deep sleep than me, going to bed later, waking up later in the morning, right? That's just her cycle. That's how she works. She's a bear. I'm a lion. This is the chronotypes, if you've ever read that book, The Power of When. And my body's up. It's ready to go at 5.
Yeah.
It's done. Unless I'm on vacation or something.
So if he goes to bed late, then
I'm over.
That's the worst part for him, right? Whereas I can go to bed late, I'll tend to sleep in a little bit more, but not even too much. Like even if I end up sleeping until 8 at the latest, like I still manage to get a good amount of my deep sleep.
Right.
It doesn't matter how late, but I have been able to see still good scores. But yeah, you need to know your circadian rhythm, but you need to start making those those incremental changes, whether that is even just 20 minutes earlier of not watching TV. So
one episode of The Office, right?
Yeah, like, well, those little things, it will make a huge difference. Or even if you're not the person to watch TV, your phone counts. If you're in your bed and looking at your phone up until the point you go to bed, that is going to affect the quality of sleep. It still counts. It's still stimulating. The whole melatonin production thing, it is real. The biggest tip I can give, other than not watching TV or being on your phone, is to get blue light blocking glasses and see if that makes a difference. Because again, if you can just make one little step, how you're going to improve is, oh, I'm not going to stop watching TV. Great, great. Then get the red glasses.
Even like placebo leads to intent, right? Like, you're telling your body that we're actually caring about this, and maybe you do watch one last episode. Maybe that's what it is, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's something else I was going to say there, and now it's totally left me. It was, I think,
you need
it was
more
pretty,
sleep.
it was quite important, but in any case, it'll come back to me.
Yeah.
So sleep is huge, man. Like, we like to focus on the big rocks before we get into anything. The second one is protein, right? So Andy and I are going to promise not to go down to 5 minutes. I'm going to take this one because Andy will go off.
Wasn't going to go as deeply as I go, because sleep is so important and we don't actually go off on tangents about it enough. Protein, yeah, we do all the time.
Yeah. So basically this, guys, like, it's the main building block in your body. If you're going to take your tissues to the limit and not supply them with the fuel they need, eventually your car runs out of gas, right?
Take your tissues to the limit.
Well, here's the thing. I know what I was going to talk about. It was about sleep and the brain atrophy they're seeing in children now because of screen time. We'll get back to it after this one because mm-hmm. that's not exciting, but it's interesting, and we should dig into it.
Yeah.
But, you know, so obviously the protein isn't providing the fuel, but it's providing the constituents, the things that build up your muscle. So if you're breaking down muscle tissue, your nitrogen balance is low, and you're not giving it anything to build it back up, you're stimulating, but you're not providing the building blocks, forget about it. You're going to have atrophy. It's going to go in that whole spiral of insulin up. Insulin has nowhere to put the nutrients, and body fat goes up, so on and so forth. So metabolism slows down. It's a bad cycle, and certainly contributes to overreaching.
Yeah.
So moving on for protein, we did it. So a little tangent. So back to the sleep.
Can I say more? No.
Andy, she was mentioning the idea of blue blocking glasses, and the reason you wear those is to block the blue light from the TV and primarily the phones that we have in bed, which I still use my phone as an alarm, and it's bad news, and I look at it some days better than others. The first thing when I wake up.
Put that yellow tone on, which
is
good.
Yeah, definitely. There's some things there, and it's nice that we're figuring that out, but they're seeing studies in children where they're having material brain atrophy, which leads to mental health issues. And they're figuring it's related to a lack of sleep. So I wasn't going to say it's because of the blue light. No, mm-hmm. it's not screen time. It's a down. It's kind of the chain of events where you're on the screen more, you're not going to bed right away, you're not getting enough sleep, and you're not getting enough quality of sleep because it's interrupted, even if you think you're sleeping.
Yeah.
And not to mention the ADD that we all have, checking your phones addictively. So these kids are seeing brain atrophy relative to their peers 10, 15 years ago.
You can also tell, they say, if the kids aren't sleeping well, it's not always like, oh, are they getting up a million times? It's partly that. It's partly like, do you go into the room and there are sheets all over the place and they are obviously just like tossing and turning all night and like it looks a mess in there? How tired do they act or feel in the mornings? Those kinds of things. And or if they're grinding their jaws, like there's so many things that could be impacting their sleep. So yes, TVs can be a huge piece of it, but there's just a lot of things to look into to see how everybody can improve their sleep quality. There's lots to look at.
Totally. Next thing is energy. Make sure you're getting the right amount of energy. So yeah, intermittent fasting is a thing. There's benefits to it, but you know, we have to be very mindful of what we're trying to achieve in the gym, what our goals are, what our activity level is, and then fueling ourselves accordingly, right? So I don't particularly mean carbohydrates or fats, just are we getting enough calories? If we're driving ourselves to burn 2,000 calories a day and we're taking in 1,100, we're going to find we're lacking that energy. We're not providing ourselves enough energy to build the body up and support the training and recovery, right? So be very mindful of that. There's a reason that runners are taking energy packs halfway through their workout. They're providing the fuel their body needs to perform. So you need to make sure you have the right amount of energy, especially if you're trying to build muscle. Not being sedentary on off days, right? So this sounds like a counter message. What do you mean? You told me not to train so much. No, I mean, don't, when you're having an off day, it doesn't mean you don't take your dog for a 3 or 4K walk. Trust me, they'll appreciate it. And you'll appreciate it when they're chill later. But, you know, move around, take a break, go do a trigger session. So a trigger session essentially is just doing some push-ups and crunches or squats, or if you have weights at home, just doing a light, very submaximal set, contracting the muscles, moving the blood around, and just sending that signal to the muscle that, you know, it needs to stick around and nutrients need to be delivered.
Could be like 5 minutes. Like that's like how brief a trigger session could be. So don't think that it's like, oh man, you're asking me to add another 20 minutes of working out of my day. It's like, no, it's just little things.
Amazing. I did two today. It was great. Like just to like, again, it helps with recovery because it's taking blood to the muscle and removing it, right? Taking the waste away.
You can also think of it as an opportunity to work on the exercises that your physio gives you, which everybody is not so great at doing. So like, because we always think, oh, I'm going to do it before I work out at the gym. And then you forget, or you didn't go to, you didn't get there early enough. And then after the workout, you're like, I just want to, I need to get going. Like I got to get back to work or whatever. So, I would say that this is a perfect way to integrate your, you know, whenever I do something like what I would consider a trigger session or kind of like a Pilates style thing for me, because I love Pilates and Pilates is very similar to physio style workouts, is working on those areas that I need to open up. Like if you know that you're slouching all day, then your trigger session could really focus on some of the things that posturally that could be bothering you, and you'll feel so much better. You'll go back to your desk. You'll feel, you know, that you're not as sore, or when you're driving, you're not going to feel as sore. I think that's so important.
Yeah. Amazing. So now thinking about adding things, supplements. So there's some supplements that we all know about that can help. So anti-inflammatories, antioxidants, berries, right? If you can get them organic, great. Taking your green and red juices, right? So we've been taking green and red juice every day. We've had a heck of a summer, like many of you had, as we've been locked up for 2 years. Now we're back at it. So we're taking Organifi. We don't work with them, though hopefully in the future we might, but we're really liking their green juice and their red juice mix.
Mm-hmm.
Red is more about the blood vessels of the body and the energy, making sure that things are flowing smoothly, the blood vessels are dilating and things are being delivered. The green is more of a detoxifying benefit, obviously, you know, providing those very good nutrients that are sometimes not available in the vegetables by the time they get to us.
Yeah, or if we're not eating a ton of dark leafy greens, it's always good to add a quick sort of green supplement. Now, I do like to take this separately, just as a side note, rather than buying a protein powder that has greens in it. Just as a side note, always get your protein powder separate from your greens.
Totally. Good one, because they're loaded in sugar and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
Eliminate inflammatory foods. This one's easy, guys. Don't eat fried things as best you can. I know the chicken wings are good. I very rarely eat them these days. Maybe once or twice a year max.
I was just saying to our F45 friends, and when we went to Merritt after...
We had some fries the other day.
We had some fries, but... And I was just going to mention that because they were really good fries. And I'm not a big fry person because I do find... Like, I just know how unhealthy they are for you. It's not just the calories.
It's the oxidized fats, guys. It's the oxidized... They wreak havoc internally. Leaky gut,
omega-6
all that good stuff.
Fats are highly inflammatory. And it's pretty much one of the worst things you can put in your body. I know people that have compared it to being as bad as smoking. So, like, fried foods is one of the worst. So, we really, really don't do it. And I'm a very picky fry person. So when I have French fries, I don't like them to be, and I was saying this to our table, I don't like them really thick. And if they're like too greasy or if they're undersalted, I'm like, I'm really picky, but I had one and then they were really good. They did them very well. And you know when it's worth it, and you just kind of try to balance out by having some more anti-inflammatory things when you
omega-3s. We didn't talk about that, but that was one I had on the list there, right? To balance that out. So they're anti-inflammatory to the max, omega-3s. So there you go. And so I think the last thing we're going to talk about, but you know, honestly, we've sort of addressed it. You know, what does that mean for F45 training, right? Like we love to celebrate our people who come in 7 days a week, week over week over week. I mean, that's a mission. And you know, we use the term NARP, non-athlete, regular person.
You got to say it, NARP.
Yeah, NARP. But NARP. But the thing is that you're kind of an athlete when you're at F45. Think about it. Like, think about the playoffs we just did. That was very athletic. So you're coming in and it's like playing a game every day, right? So you got to be mindful of that. You got to mix in your training. I mean, we want you there. If you have a 7 day week at the end of the challenge, go for it. Get after it, right? Mm-hmm. But make sure you're balancing that with like a 3 day week, right? And maybe some walking and some other activities, swimming. Just mix it up. It's really important for your psyche, your continued motivation. You know, we talked a little bit about injuries earlier. One of the things that we hear a lot about, my knees, my lower back, when people start at 45. And the reason is because everything we do a fair share, not as much these days, of plyometrics, meaning just leaving the ground, whether it's a box jump or not. If you've never done plyometrics before, I'm going to tell you right now, it's okay not to do those movements for your first month or so at F45 until you've laid the foundation. All our coaches will advocate for that. No one will ever come and say, you need to do the box jump. Now, if you're athletic, you're demonstrating good technique, you want to try it, do it. step off the box, work up to it, right? So it's incumbent on that combination of the coaching as well as your willingness to really understand and honor where you're at in your training. And maybe you do that Docklands, you know, Docklands is heavy plyometric. You do it 1 week, you don't do it the next, or you take it differently. You keep your feet on the ground. You don't, in your warm up, and you're doing the side to side jumps, you're not jumping 3 feet in the air. Maybe you're just doing little ankle hops over a line. Still plyo, but a little less intense. And so we really need to manage that intensity times volume combination at F45. And sometimes the injury is not because of overuse, guys. It's not because I've been doing too much plyo. It could also be your technique. Yeah. So always do a technique check with the coaches, particularly when it comes to the knees, because if your knees are hurting, I guarantee you're on the ball of your foot. You're not distributing the weight, probably because of a mobility or a knowledge issue. You're not distributing the weight evenly to the heel, to the ball, to the big toe, to the pinky, gripping the ground, twisting the feet into the ground. Even when you're landing from a jump, we don't forget all those principles when we land from a jump. We land from a jump, we still grip the ground, we still decelerate, we don't drop our butt to our heels, we kind of have that healthy muscle tension. These are all principles that need to be understood before getting to that higher intensity training. But it's being ignorant of those things. And we don't blame you for that. I mean, this is new for Lottie, right? It's on us during our demos to really indicate these things and coach you. But it's not a race at F45. It's not a race against the person next to you. So, you know, if the coach is letting you know, hey, your heels are coming off the ground, take a step back. Even I like have many light days these days when it comes to box step ups and stuff, because I'm hell-bent and trying to build my glute strength because it is not there. Whether it's the length of my limbs, lacking core stability or muscles firing, I have not earned the right to take a black kettlebell and step up a box right now.
Yeah. Yeah. And if this sounds like you, or if there's something that you think you could improve on with your technique, ask your coaches, ask them to watch you and say, like, you know, but if it means that sometimes you might, you know, quote unquote, lose a set because you're really asking for them to break it down for you, then be okay with that. It's not always about, oh, I'm just going to keep moving so that I can burn those calories and just go through the motions, as I always say, because a lot of the times I see people doing squats in the classes, they're going through the motions. They're not connecting to those muscles. So if that's you, or if you think that might be you, really take the time, especially during challenges, to understand your movement patterns or ask a coach. Yeah. You know, ask a coach after the class to break it down for you as well. Don't be afraid to do that. And I've even said to a client,
they still coach
mine,
us. When I go in there, they give me advice, and I've been training for, oh my gosh, 21 years.
Yeah. So yeah, I mean, because you're not going to be able to notice everything, but you also want to be able to take that feedback. It's not that you're the worst and you do it the worst compared to everyone else. Everybody has something to learn from with their technique, especially if you're feeling that it is bothering you. And I did have a client ask me recently, or say to me recently, they're having a shoulder issue. He's not quite sure. He's done some ultrasounds and it still is not very clear if something's torn or not, but it doesn't seem to be showing. So he's really frustrated because he can't feel that he can do push-ups or chest press, and certain movements are really bothering him. So he's just avoiding certain things.
Has he gotten a functional?
Yeah. Yeah. He's seeing physio. Cool. And I think I just suggested to him to ask the coaches for modifications so that he wasn't always deferring to the same exercises every time, so that he was still, you know, challenging the muscles that are around the area, but not necessarily aggravating. So ask your coaches. Don't necessarily just modify for yourself because you think you know what to do.
I can't do this. I can't use my shoulders. I can't use my fingers. I can't use my left knee.
Yeah, my wrists have hurt me.
That's a problem.
Or I have wrist problems. But just because you've had wrist problems, it actually means that you probably don't have strong forearm muscles, or like even just muscles of the hand.
Or communication with the muscles.
Yeah, or like obviously maybe even just stretching out that area. Maybe it's very tight from, you know, working at a desk and with a mouse.
I have that right now.
Typing.
I actually got tendonitis in my left hand. You know what happened, guys, is that I was sitting on a lawn chair because we got our new backyard done. So I'm sitting on a lawn chair with my laptop between my legs. So instead of being at, you know, ergonomic position at my desk, my wrist is in a fully extended position and I'm typing versus kind of a neutral position at my wrist to hand ratio, right? And that led to all this tendonitis up my left side. I'm like, well, that doesn't make sense. Tennis elbow on the hand I don't play tennis with. But, you know, that's what happened. So I just want to close this point off by saying this. Andy and I are not giving you guys the permission not to feel the burn. You will know when you have something that just doesn't feel right.
Right.
Right. Burning the sensation when you're doing a workout, that's fine.
Yeah.
We are saying, 7 days a week, feeling that for 45 minutes, not being able to get off the couch, probably need to take a rest day, right? Take your rest day, plan them in advance. But if you have something and it's particularly unilateral, meaning one side, so Andy was just talking about the shoulder injury, I have my Achilles recently, that's where you need to respect it, monitor it depending on the severity. And then if it's persistent, go get some treatment, especially if you have benefits, right? Use those benefits. Even if you're not injured, use those benefits. Because I'll tell you, when that massage therapist, and that should have been in our protocol as well around overreaching, when that massage therapist or physiotherapist or athletic therapist or chiro, they begin to find those trigger points and sort of get the tissue gliding the way it's supposed to, and then retraining the movement patterns, man, does that make a world of difference. Because, sorry, Andy, what happens is, and it's crazy, what these trigger points are is it's like a nervous system, it's a protection mechanism. The body binds up and it says, I need to guard this. And it's funny, when they're massaging you, all you want to do is hold your breath. You want to hold your breath. But the reality is, what you need to do is breathe through it, because by holding your breath and clenching, you're telling the body it's not safe to release. And right. So there's actually a technique to getting treatment as well. And it takes a lot of courage.
It's called Lamaze.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, and just to sort of echo that, but also add the point of where you're feeling pain. Joint pain is very different from muscle pain.
True.
So when somebody says, oh, my lower back, like that's a huge area. And there's so many areas, like so many muscles that are associated with lower back feeling tight or tense or hurting in a way. Sometimes just being over in that bent over position, that hinge where we hinge at the hips.
Because we front load everything by design, because that's functional, because that's how we navigate the world.
Yeah, like picking things up properly with that sort of form in mind. You know, you are going to use lower back muscles. Your muscles are good. You want to strengthen those muscles too. Sometimes they feel really fired up after a day of training at F45, because we do, if there's a day where we do a certain amount of hinges, say it's bent over rows and deadlifts and something else, sometimes we're like, the lower back starts burning. But that burn of your muscles is not a bad thing. It just means that it's working too hard, which means you should probably be turning on your glutes a little bit more or your core.
And you need strengthening there.
Yeah. So it's about understanding when something's really burning, like a muscle, if you don't want that muscle to be burning at that moment, what other muscles are you engaging or recruiting around it to help? Now, if you're feeling pain or tension in your joint, so your lower back joint, your SI, which I've been having issues with lately, which I'm not thrilled about, that is very, you know, central to, you can feel it right at
pinpoint.
That's the pinpoint, is right around the sacrum. So it's, there's an
sharp
SI joint. It just feels very tight.
Right.
Like for me, it's just like, and nothing's hurts, which is good, but that could lead to something being more painful, especially in the joints. If your knees hurt, is it from tight quads or is it actually, you know, joint pain where you feel it stiffening and it's, you feel it even while you're seated, you would feel it almost all the time.
Well, the knees are tricky, right? Because I feel that and when I'm driving, and we know, we've pretty much nailed it, that it's not a tear. I mean, I haven't had an ultrasound, but it because it's so intermittent, and I can tell right now I cannot sit on my heels with my butt on the ground in that yogi position. I can't do it.
Mm-hmm.
And lo and behold, we went on a long trip the other day and my knee was on fire after 2 hours.
Which could be from sitting and like the quad,
it's a tight,
is pulling.
But this is the point. Like you mentioned when you're sitting, I just want to distinguish for everyone, that's actually a tight quad.
Yeah,
I got tight quads right now and I got to work on it, because I know that like when I go to in that yogi position, which is like that extreme, you know, bend of the knee and the hip, I can't get there. And that's ankle mobility too, which I also have a problem with. But that tightness in the quad leads to that, manifests and refers to the knee. And we all think we've blown our knees because we've got tight quads. So be very mindful.
Yeah. I mean, that's where, again, it's so valuable to go to a physio or a chiro as a preventative measure, not just when things are bothering you, but also even if it's bothering you just a little bit and you're like, I'm sure it's not a big deal, or I don't really know, I'm just going to push through it. Always worth getting assessed, because they can tell you, you know, this feels really tight, or here's a movement pattern isn't looking so great. So I really want you to focus
even
on
if
that.
You don't know, you're like, how am I moving? Yeah. Just ask them, because, you know, sometimes we think we know and we've got flat feet going on because we're not actually talking to our feet and asking our toes to do work. But you see me wear those goofy shoes in the gym that everyone likes to give me a hard time about.
Vibram?
Yeah, the finger toe shoes. Everyone's puking. Yeah. but anyhow, so sorry about you guys missing your dinner.
Like giant gloves,
but
you know?
The reality is, as embarrassing as they are, like I'm doing it because I need to talk to my toes because our toes have been like encased in shoes and they're just like paddles on, off, on, off. And so if we're not working on our toe dexterity, then we're going to have balance implications and muscle recruitment implications.
One of my instructors, when I did my FST fascial stretch therapy course, used to call shoes foot coffins. He never wore them. He always was barefoot and he could always grip the ground and foot coffins. And then they're crammed in there and then, you know, then you don't get that full.
A lot of pedicures for that guy, eh?
Yeah.
Probably wasn't playing tennis. Didn't have tennis feet. I can't even reveal my feet. That's part of the problem, but we won't go there. Look, guys, this has been a great chat about.
Just hear yawn.
Yeah, I know. This has been a great chat about something that we've been challenged by many people, even people who've never done F45, like, isn't it too much? And the reality is it's not. But any training takes mindfulness around your recovery from a hormonal standpoint, which I hope we touched on enough. If anyone has further questions, happy to address them through our DM. But also some of the kind of musculoskeletal and nutritional things that we need to be thinking about.
Yeah, DM us as well whenever you have a question. I have to figure out if there's maybe we'll do a form. We might as well do a form that's always active. As we always use Airtable, and we'll put it in our link tree. So if you have any questions, and then we can cover them.
Yeah, WhatsApp group, public WhatsApp group.
Yeah, well, we have the challenge WhatsApp group. So if you're not in it, please let me know. I can send you the invite via Instagram or text message, and you can go right into it. And it's just a chat group with all of our members, even some that aren't on the challenge that just want to be a part of the chat and, you know, give. Yeah, like obviously there's like some fun, like, you know, community talk in there as well. What's going on? If there's
like Lane's back in town, that's pretty huge.
Lane is back in town, and Daryl's bars were just on sale at Portino's.
Coach Amber bought my favorite flavor before I could get there, which I'm upset about.
Yeah. So important stuff is going on in there. But if you're not a part of it, I think it's really valuable to know what's going on with the community and trading some tips and things like that. So let me know if you want to be added into it and what your next questions may be. You can always DM us, but I think we'll do a form just to make it easier.
Sweet.
Sweet.
You got to figure out how to end these things. Yeah. Hey, Team Coach JB here. We have an incredible offer for you. So if you've never tried F45 before, right now, for half price, that's $30 for a full week of unlimited training, you can come down to 15 Wellington Street North and work out with Hamilton's Reader's Choice voted best fitness club in the city. That's 7 days for $30. Simply go to our website, www.f45training.ca/Hamilton Downtown/trial, and sign up for your 7-day trial now. You will not be disappointed.
What the F? 45.